Brother Eric John Phelps, welcome to the broadcast today here with 24/7 World Radio, with my podcast of this July 1st, 2024, and it is directed primarily to the evaluation of my friend Chris Pinto's new release titled American Jesuits, A History of Jesuitism in the United States, an Adulam Films production. On the back of it, it reads, American Jesuits, I do not like the late resurrection of the Jesuits. If ever any congregation of men could merit eternal perdition on earth and in hell, it is the company, this company of Loyola. President John Adams. Next quotation. It is my opinion that if the liberties of this country, the United States of America, are destroyed, it will be by the subtlety of the Roman Catholic Jesuit priests, for they are the most crafty, dangerous enemies of civil and religious liberty. Unquote. Marquis de Lafayette, the great boy general under the great and good and godly the Baptist George Washington, I would add. Quote, this war would never have been possible without the sinister influence of the Jesuits, unquote. Abraham Lincoln. Taken from Charles Chenecke's great work, 50 Years in the Church of Rome. Quote, Dr. Anthony Fauci takes great pride in his Jesuit education. As he proudly professes, it has formed his life, it has formed his life and his career. Jesuit Father Daniel Lehart. Chris Pinto now states as a summation of his work on the back, American Jesuits may be one of the most important documentaries ever produced concerning the social and political conflicts in the United States today. The influence of Rome in America is one that was written about extensively by authors throughout the 19th century and into the 20th century, which many warnings about a hidden plan by foreign powers to enslave the country. Nevertheless, most modern history books have been carefully rewritten to remove critical information that would likely warn the people about what has been happening behind the scenes for more than 200 years. It is just a coincidence that many key figures in power today, Joe Biden, again, is it just a coincidence that many key figures in power today, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Dr. Anthony Fauci, to name a few, are either directly or indirectly associated with the Roman Catholic Jesuit order? And what will be the ultimate influence of this notorious society, which has been expelled from at least 83 countries, city-states, and cities around the world? Unquote. Now, this is Chris's summation, or I should say, something to grab your curiosity. On his most excellent production, titled American Jesuits, A History of Jesuitism in the United States, and I recommend my listeners get a copy from him. You can get it from Adulam Films Production, and just check it out on the web. It'll come right up. And get about 5 copies each, because there's coming a day when it's going to be illegal to own it. Kind of like my book, Vatican Assassins. So, get a copy of his American Jesuits. He has a picture of Jesuit John Peter de Schmet, that John Surratt, Edmund Walsh, William J. Donovan, and John Wilkes Booth. So it's a nice five portraits together of these evil, wicked, and sinister men. And I will do some commenting about them also as we go on. So get a copy of it. It's wonderful. And to you, Chris, thank you for a great job. And I know it must have cost you a tremendous amount of time, effort, research, study. But may the Lord be praised for your work that you did here. So I will now critique it. I shouldn't say critique. I should say kind of summarize the points that Chris Pinto made. And with a view to adding a few things, Brother Chris, that I recommend you make a sequel to this. First, great first half. You need to make a second half. Now I realize you can't have anything to do with me because I'm a racist, a sexist, and a bigot, supposedly. So I realize why you'd rather not include my name in your work, for which, you know, I understand that. However, I would seriously request that you consider what I have to say here on adding some things to your repertoire of exposing the Jesuits and making it into a second half. So, I see, first of all, that you have the origin of the Jesuits. You do a wonderful job in their history, their creation, the 30 Years' War, the papal suppression of the Jesuits, their reviving in 1814 by Pius VII, some great quote from Lafayette. You have some interesting people there that you interviewed. Of course, I know David Daniels, who's a wonderful guy. Chick Publications, and it was Chick Publications, of course, as you know, that put out the 6-volume comic book set on Alberto Rivera, which was a great service to us, as Rivera was indeed a Jesuit, and those who deny it are liars. Going on, we see here that you mentioned several very good books there. And you go and get into you get into Bill Clinton. And it's very good that you showed he was a complete and total Jesuit coadjutor. And he appointed several people from his Georgetown University that he attended to be in his administration. I think 7 of them you name. Well done. And you also really did a great job in exposing McCarthyism, that it was to hijack a truly anti-communist movement to make it look as those who were anti-communist look like McCarthy, like he's an inquisitor, like he's a radical. And so Walsh was behind that because, you see, as you know, the Jesuits are the creators of communism, so they protected their communism by raising up one of their graduates at Marquette, McCarthy, to go to this extreme, which in the end turned the American people off, as did the John Birch Society. John Birch Society went to an extreme. And the John Birch Society, in Gary Allen's work, None Dare Call a Conspiracy, why, who did they blame for the communist conspiracy? Why, they blame the Jews. And Gary Allen goes on to quote Pedro Arrupe about this international conspiracy of communism, and Pedro Arrupe was the leader of it because he was a Jesuit general in 1965. So that was a great point you made, Chris, to showing that McCarthyism was just to hijack the anti-communist movement that was legitimate, because if it ever was proven that the Jesuits were the masters of communism, as they are, that they're the founders of it, that they're the protectors of it, that they're the preachers of it under various doctrines such as liberation theology and what have you, and even to a certain point social justice with that evil, wicked Luigi Taparelli that you brought out in your... It was wonderful. You did a great job. The Jesuits always must protect the fact They must camouflage the fact. They must have a bodyguard of lies around the truth of the fact that they are the authors, promoters, and financiers of international communism. And that's why they backed Yankee North. They openly backed the South, but they secretly backed Yankee North, which Karl Marx called the American Civil War a communist revolution on the part of the North. But getting back to reviewing some of the things you said. We have, let me see here. Oh, yes. I found Dr. Ronald Cook to really be excellent. And he writes a book called The Jesuit Kulturkampf in the United States. I mean, this is exactly what they pulled in Germany, of which Bismarck was their mortal enemy, of which the Jesuits sought to assassinate him twice. I cover him in my book. But there is a Kulturkampf right now in the United States. And they're about ready to... See, they had the Kulturkampf in Germany in the late 1800s that results in the New Right Nazi Party in the 1930s. And so they're having a Kulturkampf right now in America that's going to result in a New Right quasi-fascist party, which is one of the things I would like you to address in a future a DVD, Brother Chris. Then we have, you talk about Walter Hagen, and you talk about The Pope's Mussolini by David Kurtzer. David Kurtzer is an excellent author. He wrote another work called The Popes Against the Jews that I quoted. Brilliant Jewish professor, and he is completely on to the fact of the Jesuit power and what they're going to do here in America if they have their way. So, great source. Let me see. The Red Republic by Hyslop. Never heard of that. That's wonderful that you found that. England Warned and Counseled by Dibdin. Excellent work. Never heard of that. And that Churchill and de Gaulle stated after World War II that both their nations had went through a second 30 years war. Now, I mentioned second 30 years war in my book, Vatican Assassins, thinking that I had coined the term. But I got that from Theodor Greisinger in his work, The Jesuits, The History of the Jesuits is Told to the German People, that he wrote in 1873. So, for Churchill and de Gaulle to come out and say that their countries just went through a second 30 years war, when both Churchill and de Gaulle were Jesuit coadjutors, I find that intriguing. And they were absolutely right. Their countries had gone through a second 30 years war. But this one was successful because it destroyed Protestant Germany. Whereas the first 30 years war did not destroy Protestant Lutheran Germany. As God raised up men to help the Germans, and especially the great, the good, the godly. Gustavus Adolphus, when he brought his beautiful white Saxon Swedish army of Lutherans down into Germany to save the Reformation on the battlefield. You also dealt with Hitler, of course. That was great. You mentioned that that Hitler said that Lenin was trained by Jesuits. That was a great quote. Of course he was. Lenin was trained by Jesuits in, what was it, Switzerland. So, and we also know that Hitler and Stalin walked the grounds of the Schönberg Castle of the Habsburgs in Vienna. So they would work together in the future purging, destruction of the Jewish Pale of Settlement during World War II. That's why Hitler would attack September 1st in 1939. Stalin would attack September 19th, 3 weeks later, after Hitler attacks into Poland. Stalin comes in from the east, Hitler comes in from the west, they divide the country. That's going to be their Catholic country to host their 6 death camps, eliminating the Pale of Settlement that was set up by the Jesuits to begin with under Catherine the Great Whore, Catherine the Great of Russia, who was a German, but working with the Jesuits when the Pope suppressed the order, and she allowed the Jesuits to come into Russia, just as Frederick the Great, the head of Freemasonry on the continent, allowed the Jesuits to come into Prussia. They would create the Pale of Settlement, driving the Jews there for their future destruction in the following century, with Stalin and Hitler and Roosevelt and Churchill all working together. So I'm going to recommend American Jesuits to my students. So I hope to buy a lot of these from you, Brother Chris. You deserve to have a fortune, to be given a fortune for your work here. But it's unfortunate that the vast majority of American Christian men who have any money won't give you a penny. And I speak from experience. But that's okay. The Lord will continue to provide for us as we need those funds, and he will do the same for you, my brother. But you ought to be a millionaire because of this tremendous work and how it will greatly influence the country for good if people would but give an ear to it. Okay, so I can't thank you enough, and I can't praise your work enough, American Jesuits, and well done, my brother. Now to go on. Okay, now I want to help you, my brother, in realizing, maybe you already do, but in realizing that the Jesuits were equally on the side of the North as they were equally on the side of the South during the war between the states, or rather the war of Northern Aggression, or rather the Socialist Communist Roman Catholic War of Northern Aggression against the historic white Anglo-Saxon Protestant and Baptist peoples of the South, as well as the Black Baptists of the South. It was a religious war. It was not a political war. It was not a war to free the slaves. That's all nonsense. It was a war to centralize power in District of Columbia for the future creation of their Holy Roman 14th American Empire that would wage wars around the world, crusades around the world, for the benefit of the Pope in reducing all nations to the temporal power of the Pope. And the Jesuits had decided to use the most powerful, virulent, highly advanced nation in the world, if they could but conquer it and then control this government, than to use it as their tool of war to further their Counter-Reformation Council of Trent. This was the real reason for the war between the states. So, you did a great job proving that the Jesuits were behind the Lincoln assassination. You quoted extensively from Charles Chenecky, from General Harris's work on Rome's part in the assassination of Lincoln, and a few other things I believe you quoted. But I've overlooked it in the past, and in your work, I believe you may have overlooked it, is that the North was involved in the assassination of Lincoln in the Jesuit of Bernardin F. Wigett of Aloysius College, or Aloysius Church, in Washington, who was not only the overseer of the assassination cabal in Washington, which included John Surratt and John Wilkes Booth and Surratt's mother, Mary Surratt, and the others. But Bernardine F. Wigett was also the secret advisor and overseer from the Jesuits of Georgetown that he worked with, and the controller of Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War. Edwin Stanton was the one who orchestrated the assassination on the part of the North, and Bernardine F. Wigett had a hand in that also, in overseeing that. Now I want to quote to you a secret note, two notes that were discovered in 1961 by Ray Neff. Ray Neff discovered two coded messages written by Lafayette Baker. Lafayette Baker was involved in the assassination of Lincoln. And this is brought out in the book titled They Wanted Lincoln Dead by Troy Cowan. Classic work for you. And here Lafayette Baker tells who the real assassins were of Lincoln in his notes. He says here, on page 204, "I am constantly being followed. They are professionals. I cannot fool them. In New Rome, there walk three men." Look at that. In New Rome. What's New Rome? New Rome is Washington. It's called Rome on the Potomac, as you know. Washington on the Lap of Rome by Justin Fulton, which you quoted, brother. In New Rome, which is Washington, there walk three men, a Judas, who's Edwin Stanton, a Brutus, Andrew Johnson, who's 32nd degree Freemason, and a spy, which was Lafayette Baker. Each planned that he should be the king when Abraham should die. One trusted not the other, but they went on for that day, waiting for that final moment when, with pistol in his hand, one of the sons of Brutus, Brutus being Andrew Johnson, one of the sons of Brutus, could sneak behind that cursed man, which was Lincoln, and put a bullet in his brain and lay his clumsy corpse away. As the fallen man lay dying, Judas came, Judas being Stanton, and paid respects to one he hated. And when at last he saw him die, he said, quote, "Now the ages have him, and the nation now have I," unquote. But alas, fate would have it, Judas fell from grace, and with him went Brutus down to their proper place. But lest one is left to wonder what happened to the spy, I can safely tell you this, it was I, namely Lafayette Baker. The author goes on and says, a second coded message said, quote, "It was on the 10th of April, 65, when I first knew that the plan was in action. Eckert had made all the contacts. The deed to be done on the 14th, I did not know the identity of the assassin, but I knew most all else when I approached E.S., that's Edwin M. Stanton, Lincoln's Secretary of War, about it. He at once acted surprised and disbelieving. Later he said, quote, "You are a party to it too. Let us wait and see what comes of it, and then we will know better how to act in the matter," unquote. I soon discovered what he meant, that I was a party to it, when the following day I was shown a document that I knew to be a forgery, but a clever one, which made it appear that I had been in charge of a plot to kidnap the president, the vice president being the instigator. Then I became a party to that deed, even though I did not care to. On the 13th, he discovered that the president had ordered that the legislature of Virginia be allowed to assemble to withdraw that state's troops from action against the U.S. He, Stanton, fermented immediately into an insane tirade. Sick. Then, for the first time, I realized his mental disunity and his insane and fanatical hatred for the president. There are few in the War Department that respect the president or his strategy, but there are not many who would countermand an order that the president had given. However, during that instant, that insane moment, he sent a telegram to General Weitzel, W-E-I-T-Z-E-L, Weitzel, countermanding the president's order of the 12th. Then he laughed in a most spine-chilling manner and said, quote, "If he would to know who rescinded, sick, his order, we will let Lucifer let him. Be off, Tom, and see to the arrangements. There can be no mistakes," unquote. This is the first that I knew that he was the one responsible for the assassination plot. Always before, I thought that either he did not trust me, for he really trusted no one, or he was protecting someone, until it was to his benefit to expose them. But now I know the truth, and it frightens me no end. I fear that somehow I may become the sacrificial goat. There were at least 11 members of Congress involved in the plot, no less than 12 Army officers, 3 naval officers, and at least 24 civilians, of which one was a governor of a loyal state. 5 were bankers of great repute, 3 were nationally known newspapermen, and 11 more industrialists of great repute and wealth. There were probably more that I know nothing of. The names of these known conspirators is presented without comment or notation in Volume 1 of this series. And quote, Neff, this guy that wrote this down, that's quoting this, Neff searched the volume and found nothing additional. Why, of course, because it was purged. $85,000 was contributed by the named persons to pay for the dead, pay for the deed. Again, $85,000 was contributed to the named persons to pay for the deed. Only 8 persons knew the details of the plot and the identity of the others. I fear for my life. LCB Lafayette Baker. On page 204, we read, Lafayette Baker died on July 3rd, 1868. He was 42 years old. Baker's death served as a warning to others to keep quiet and don't volunteer incriminating evidence. 100 years later, chemical analysis of Baker's hair showed he died from arsenic poisoning. Unquote. The author goes on page 208, titled John Surratt's Capture, and he rightly showed how the Jesuits were involved in secreting John Surratt out of the United States through Quebec, through Montreal, to Liverpool, to Rome, and then to Alexandria, Egypt, to then be captured by the Egyptian authorities and sent back to the United States where he would stand trial. And as you mentioned in your video, Chris, that a high Roman Catholic woman on the jury would acquit because, according to the doctrine of Thomas Aquinas, it's no murder to kill a heretic. Mm-hmm. That's good Catholic justice for you. The author goes on page 70, showing that some of the most powerful men in the government were involved in the Lincoln assassination. The first one he has here is Andrew Johnson. We must remember that Andrew Johnson was a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Freemason. So here we have the Jesuits who wrote the protocols about this time, maybe a few years later, in the 1870s, 1880s, thereabouts, saying that they kill their own Freemasons. Remember, the protocols is blamed on the Jews. It's forgery. They want it to look like the Jews wrote the protocols when the great Leo Laman proved in his book, Behind the Dictators, that the Jesuits wrote the protocols. And so the Jesuits, in writing the protocols, say they kill their own Freemasons. Well, and they use their own Freemasons to their ends. So Andrew Johnson was a Freemason that Jesuit Bernardine F. Wigett and other Jesuits in Georgetown used to participate in the assassination of Lincoln. There's another one, General Augur. Now, I can't find out if he's a Freemason. I would imagine that he is. But this particular General Augur, Christopher C. Augur, was the commanding general overseeing security for the city of Washington. He was to create conditions for the assassin to safely pass the checkpoints leaving the city. This he did, and we read it from Finis Bates' works, The Escape and Suicide of John Wilkes Booth. Finis Bates, who was an attorney out of Tennessee, wrote on page 217 concerning General Christopher Augur, A-U-G-U-R, It stands as a matter of history that at about the hour of 4 o'clock in the afternoon of April 14th, 1865, General C.C. Augur ordered the Jesuits called in from the protection of the life. Wait a second. I'm thinking about something else. It stands as a matter of history that at about the hour of 4 o'clock in the afternoon of April 14, 1865, General C.C. Augur ordered the guards called in from the protection of the life of President Lincoln, then known to be threatened and in imminent danger, as stated by General Dana, and that at 10 minutes past 10 o'clock that same evening, the President was assassinated, and at 10:30, 20 minutes later, the Federal Guards, still on duty, opened the gates for Booth, the assassin, to pass out over the East Potomac Bridge, so that within 6 hours after the order of General Augur, the President had been shot, and the criminal had escaped through the Federal lines, his escape having been made possible by the order of General Augur. This is a Yankee Union general in charge of the army of the city of Washington, and he is directly under Edwin M. Stanton, the Secretary of War, because he got an order from Stanton to do that. Goes on. By the order of General Augur, whether designedly or not, the result was the same, and on the 25th day of January, 1898, 33 years later, the officials of the War Department find that proof of the fact that John Wilkes Booth lived and was still at large was of no importance to their department, nor to the Department of Justice of the United States. Otherwise, proper reference would have been made and the Department of Justice officially notified instead of finding against an investigation of the facts submitted. The conspiracy continued. It's like the Kennedy assassination conspiracy continues today. So my point being is that this General Christopher C. Augur was a Northern Yankee Union general involved in the plot to assassinate President Abraham Lincoln. And he is working with John Surratt, ensuring his escape, and Surratt has been tutored by Jesuit Bernardine F. Wiggett at the Surratt House in Washington City. So the connection between Wiggett and Surratt and Wiggett and Staunton and Staunton and Augur is undeniable. So the Jesuits are working both sides for their purposes, using their subordinate Scottish Rite Freemasons. Going on now in our book, They Wanted Lincoln Dead, on page 70. I just covered General Augur. And the next one is Albert Pike, 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason. He was the American Pope of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. He was a Confederate general. And notice here what the Roth author writes of Albert Pike. Albert Pike was a brilliant man with many unpopular ideas. To protect himself from judgmental people, he presented a false front. His public persona allowed him to gain public acceptance as a lawyer, writer, newspaper editor, and many other successful endeavors. Pike rose to the highest rank within the secret society called the Freemasons. To satisfy his need to express his true beliefs, he helped create a secret organization called the Knights of the Golden Circle, KGC. Many years later, when the KGC was disbanded, the Ku Klux Klan was born. Pike was able to express his darker side from within these secret societies. Albert Pike knew fellow Freemason and Congressman Clement Laird Vallandigham. Vallandigham knew Edwin Stanton, and he introduced Stanton to Pike. So, we have Pike's connection to Stanton. And by the way, President Andrew Johnson would later pardon Albert Pike for treason, because they're all working together in the Brotherhood, subject to the Jesuit order, for the assassination of Lincoln. And the question is why? Now the question is, why did these radical red Republicans in the North, coupled with the Masonic Jesuit conspirators in the South? Well, by the way, I have one more thing to add. In the book titled First Chaplain of the Confederacy, Father Darius Hubert S.J., we see that the first chaplain of the Southern Confederacy was a Jesuit. So, his name is Father Darius Hubert, H-U-B-E-R-T. And there's a book titled First Chaplain of the Confederacy, written by Catherine Bentley Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. And it was published in, let me see here now, 1920. Come on, see if we can get the page. It's published in 2020. So, here is Hubert, the Jesuit chaplain of the Confederacy, greeting the Yankee Union Army as it enters Richmond. Now remember, the cities that were destroyed by the Yankee Union Catholic Communist Army were Protestant cities. The Protestant city of Columbia, South Carolina. The Protestant city of Vicksburg, Mississippi. The Protestant city of Atlanta in Alabama, or in Georgia. The Protestant city of Richmond in Virginia. Richmond, Columbia, Atlanta, and Vicksburg, all Protestant cities, but they didn't destroy Catholic New Orleans. You see how it was a crusade of Yankee North run by the Roman Catholics and their Jesuits to demolish the white Protestants of the South? And here you have the chief chaplain of the Southern Confederacy meeting with certain of these Yankee Union generals. On page 85 of First Chaplain. When Richmond fell, Father Hubert's Jesuit confrere, Hippolyte Gachi, was in the city as well, having been sent with a few nuns from Lynchburg to the Stuart Hospital in Richmond several weeks earlier. Gachi was sanguine about the arrival of the, quote, victorious Yankee army, unquote, in the capital, greeting Catholic Union officers and chaplains as the, quote, best of enemies, unquote, and extolling their magnanimity. Quote, I don't know whether the Protestants of Richmond realized to what extent the kindly attitude of the conquering army was due to the Catholicism of its leaders, especially General Edward Ord. Remember, there's Fort Ord out of California, named after him. And that consequently, it is to Catholicism that the conquered are beholden, unquote. So, here is Hubert's friend, Gachi, meeting these Yankee Union generals and having a gay old time. Because, you see, the Jesuits on the north, the Jesuits in the south, Wiget in the north and Huber in the south, are working together for the destruction of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant southern cities to the end that they would then create an empire on the ruins of the Federal Republic, and that it would be the Pope's Holy Roman, 14th Amendment, socialist communist, corporate fascist American empire that the Pope would use to conquer the world with its military colossus. That was the end game. That was the real purpose of the war. Okay, let's go on. Now back to they wanted Lincoln dead. Here's what Lincoln said at a meeting with his staff, including Stanton, who was hated Lincoln, wanted to treat the South as a conquered territory, just like the fanatical Thaddeus Stevens out of Pennsylvania here, buried over in Chestnut Street in Lancaster. So we read here, Lincoln continued, quote, I think it providential that this great rebellion is crushed, just as Congress has adjourned, and there are none of the disturbing elements of that body to hinder and embarrass us. If we are wise and discreet, we will reanimate the states, get their governments in successful operation, and order prevailing, and the Union reestablished. That's the old Union. That's what was the cry was, the old Union to preserve. General Buchanan, James Buchanan was defending the old Union, or the Union as it was, the old Federal Union, not the new National Union that they would, the radical Red Republicans would put upon us. So we see here, and the Union reestablished before Congress comes together in December. We can do no better, accomplish more without them than with them. There are men in Congress who, if their motives are good, are nevertheless impractical, and who possess feelings of hate and vindictiveness, in which I do not sympathize and cannot participate. I hope there will be no persecution, no bloody work, after the war is over. Lincoln had no idea that the radicals would put on the horrible reconstruction of the South for 12 years, from 1865 to 1877. No one need expect me to take any part in hanging or killing those men, even the worst of them. Enough lives have been sacrificed. We must extinguish our resentments if we expect harmony and union, unquote. For Stanton, Lincoln's desire to forgive the South was an outrage. It confirmed his reasoning that Lincoln needed killing. This is why they killed Lincoln. He was going to reestablish the Southern states on the same footing that they had before the war. That would be maintaining the old federal Confederate Union. This is not what the Jesuits or the radical Red Republicans wanted. They wanted a new union, a new national union. And to get that, they would have to pass the 14th Amendment while the Southern states were under Reconstruction with occupational Yankee Union armies down there at their capitals to make sure that that would happen. Without the Reconstruction, there is no 14th Amendment. Without the 14th Amendment, there is no national citizenship for blacks and whites. Not just for blacks, but for blacks and whites, because the 14th Amendment was to make citizenship national. Without national citizenship, there's no new national government. Without the new national government of July 28, 1868, with the passing of the 14th Amendment, there would be no District of Columbia Act in 1871, where they would consolidate the various cities, Washington and Georgetown, into the District of Columbia to make District of Columbia rule in the Potomac. And all of this was done in anticipation of making an empire out of the little republic and then putting upon the centralized government an empire of emergency war powers military government in 1933. But let's go on a little bit farther. I think I'll just ad lib a little here. The Jesuits will then begin to use their robber barons with their monopolies in steel like Vanderbilt and oil like Rockefeller and others. And you can read about this in this tremendous book called The Robber Barons. There's another book called America's Real Lace, America's Irish Rich, where you have the Buckleys and the Cuddies and the McDonalds. You have all the super rich robber barons. They're going to have their monopolies so that they can produce a war machine unlike any that's ever existed in the world. And they're going to conduct their War of the Great Plains to move the American Indians off their lands and consolidate them to little reservations so that they can have an empire from sea to shining sea, which song was composed by a woman feminist and a lesbian, for which reason I refuse to sing America the Beautiful. No, that's a song about making an empire from sea to shining sea. And that's when the mistreatment of the American Indians really starts, after the war between the states. So you have the robber barons, you have the consolidation of power, you have, by the time we get to Theodore Roosevelt, Roosevelt was made the president after the Jesuits assassinated McKinley, and Roosevelt will have an advisor, and that advisor will be a Jesuit named Thomas Sherman. You can get a book called The General's Son, story about Thomas Sherman, the Jesuit. And Thomas Sherman wanted to reenact his father's march to the sea from Atlanta to Savannah in Georgia during the Roosevelt administration. And the people of Georgia said, ain't no way in heaven or in hell you're going to reenact that savage, vicious, rapacious, murderous, thieving, plundering march to the sea in a 60-mile-wide swath from Atlanta to Savannah, to the coast of Georgia. That's Theodore Roosevelt, okay? So, as we move on, The Jesuits, in building their empire from sea to shining sea, they need a national bank to finance it. So they'll create the big gold crisis in 1907, and they're going to use their financial man in the country called J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan will eliminate, or be used to eliminate, those enemies, primarily Jewish enemies, of the Federal Reserve Act. Federal Reserve Act is being drawn up in Jekyll Island in Florida. There's a book you want to get called Jackals of Jekyll. And when this is being drawn up, there were certain enemies of the Federal Reserve Act, like Isidore Strauss and others. They managed to coax on the Titanic so they could put it at the bottom of the North Atlantic in 1912 on good old April 15th. Yeah. And so with that, in 1913, the Jesuits will have their apostate Presbyterian, Woodrow Wilson, the president, overseen by Joseph P. Tumulty, a fourth degree of Knight of Columbus, and this Knight of Columbus will be advising everything Woodrow Wilson does. And so Woodrow Wilson will then sign into law the Federal Reserve Act, allegedly passed on December 23rd, 1913. And so now the Pope has his bank. It has a 20-year charter. But in 1927, since the Federal Reserve Bank seems to be working well and people are prospering with the Roaring Twenties and credits in circulation, in 1927, Louis T. McFadden will put a bill into the Congress giving the corporate charter of the Federal Reserve an unlimited, unending charter. In other words, there's no way for the charter of the Federal Reserve to expire. It's unlimited, thanks to Louis T. McFadden, that would later attack the Federal Reserve. So now the Post Bank and the bank's in place. In 1913, you got the Roaring Twenties. You got the Catholics swarming in here from all over Europe, all the Italian Catholics, the Polish Catholics, the Irish Catholics, turning the major cities into Catholic ruled areas with lots of crime and lots of sin and lots of mafia. For which reason, the Ku Klux Klan would be revived to oppose Catholic immigration or Catholic invasion of the country. But you can't beat the devil at his own game. Ku Klux Klan was run by high-level Freemasons that would ultimately lose, because you can't fight the devil using his means. So, you got the Federal Reserve Bank in place. It now has an unlimited charter. It's in 1927. They're going to start the American branch of the Knights of Malta out of New York City in 1927. And then 1929, you're going to have Pietro Tacci Venturi, that demon-possessed Jesuit advising Mussolini, which, by the way, Chris did a great job finding that picture. And he will be overseeing the writing of the Lateran Treaty that will give the temporal power back to the Pope in 1929, and about $95 million worth of monies to the papacy from the Italian people, so the papacy can take that money and invest it and buy corporations for pennies on the dollar after Joe Kennedy would cause a stock market crash in 1929, he being the chief short seller of stock and Knight of Malta. And later, under FDR, Ambassador to Court of St. James. So, everything's in place. Meanwhile, they've been registering births, and since about 1906, Congress has called for the birth registration, and they deem it to be completed in 1933. And in 1933, we're in the height of the Great Depression that's been caused by the papacy. The Pope's Federal Reserve Bank withdrawing 40% of credit. Joe Kennedy selling short. Now we have the horrible, terrible Great Depression. That FDR on a white horse is going to come along. He's going to be savior for the day. So this brings us to the third thing you might wish to add, Chris, in your supplement or complement second edition of your American Jesuits. The first being that Yankee North, Jesuits running Stanton, and the military in Washington contributed to the assassination of Lincoln and enabled Booth to escape. These were the radical Red Republicans, totally controlled by the Jesuit order out of Georgetown, specifically Bernadine F. Wiget. Now, But openly, the papacy's on the side of the South. And the Pope sends a picture of him, a portrait of himself to Jefferson Davis at the Capitol in Alabama. And it looks like, well, the Pope's on the side of the South. And that's the last thing he's on. They're Protestants. He wants to incite hatred in the hearts of the Protestants of the North for the people of the South. Because after all, those Southerners are siding with the Pope and the Pope's siding with them. We'll fight that much harder to defeat the South. And when the Catholics found out that the Pope had sided with the South in the Catholics in the Yankee Union Army, 100,000 of them deserted. But that's after Lee lost Gettysburg. That's after the practical end of the war. Between on the same dates of Vicksburg and Gettysburg, around July 3rd, July 4th, those two battles that the Yankee Union North won ended the war for the most part. It was just mopping up operations after that. Vicksburg was Protestant. Gettysburg was a little Protestant town. And so, with that, they killed Lincoln because he did not want a centralized power. So they kill him in 1865, covered up. 1868 rolls around, they put forth the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, Brother Chris, centralized power in Washington. And you can read about this in Alexander Stephen's great work, A Constitutional View of the Late War Between the States, written in 1867. It's a two-volume set. You can get it from Sprinkle Publications in Virginia. And Alexander Stephen's, although a Freemason, yet properly wrote this great work, said that the purpose of the North was to first centralize power, and then after centralizing power, it would create an empire out of America. And that's exactly what happened. They centralized power in 1868 with the declared passage of the 14th Amendment. And then they would create an empire on March 9th, 1933. And this is what I would like you to add in your coming sequel to your work. March 9th, 1933 was FDR's Proclamation 2040 that continued forever until the termination proclamation of the president. Continued Proclamation 2039 that had established an emergency war powers military government on March 6, 1933. That's a Monday. FDR is inaugurated on Saturday, the 4th. The 5th, he calls for emergency session of Congress, Proclamation 2038. On the Monday, the 6th, he issues Proclamation 2039, calling for an emergency, calling for instituting a banking holiday for 4 days. And he deems all the American people as hoarders under Trading with the Enemy Act, because Trading with the Enemy Act was not repealed after World War I, because World War I didn't end. It was just an armistice. So they didn't repeal Trading with the Enemy Act. Didn't have to. And so out of Trading with the Enemy Act, he puts forth Proclamation 2039, deems every American now a U.S. citizen. I will add, it's not in the proclamation, but that's what we become, because we become hoarders. Hoarders of gold, and if hoarders, then enemies, and if enemies, then under Trading with the Enemy Act. And we no longer are the sovereign people, we're the conquered people. And we become surety for this all caps entity, this U.S. citizen, as a result of either a birth certificate or a certificate of naturalization. And we volunteered, because we didn't say anything about it. So, March 6th, Proclamation 2039, March 9th, Proclamation 2040, Emergency Banking Relief Act, and then Proclamation 2040. And now the Jesuits have created a de facto empire, centralized empire, as of that date. March 9th, 1933 is a benchmark date for American history. And if you add that up, 3 for March, 9th, that's another 3 plus 3 plus 3, that's 12. And then 33 out of that, that's another 6, you're going to get 18. 18 divided by 3 is 6 plus 6 plus 6. The Jesuit number, 666. How do we know it's a Jesuit number? Because if you take the Jesuit seal of the general with all the points of IHS, you have 32 points on the outside, you have 4 points on the inside. And if you add those points arithmetically, 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, 3 plus 5 is 8. If you added all that, all the 36 points like that, you're going to come up with 666. 666 is a Jesuit order's number. And is it any wonder the Jesuit order is the one who has to bring the final pope to power, and he's going to implement his number as the beast for 666? Remember, the final pope of Rome, slain with a sword, risen from the bed, dead to be the Antichrist. He's the seventh Roman Caesar. Every pope considers himself a Caesar. And by the way, Chris, I have a chart. Brother Ed got this to me. And it shows from the very bottom of Peter, of the tree, all these branches are all these different popes. And the top is an equilateral triangle with IHS in the center. The Jesuits are bringing the final pope to power, evidenced by this chart that one of them had made. Brother Ed Canfield, thank God for what he found there. So, now that we have this story, you have the huge, you have the destruction of the South, destruction of the Indian nations, building an empire from sea to shining sea, a railroad from Chicago to St. Louis, to Virginia City to San Francisco. You got the Comstock Lode with all the gold. You have all this wealth that's now part of the empire. And now with this empire they have in 1933, with all the monopoly in steel production, ship production, just look at that place in New Jersey where they built all the clipper ships. What was it called? The Hog Island. Hog Island, a huge place of shipbuilding where they would build these ships for World War I and World War II. For the empire. Then we have Virginia out of Norfolk. They're building the greatest, most powerful aircraft carriers in the world. What for? For the empire, to wage war around the world for the benefit for the Pope. They have the U.S. Navy with their SEALs and the Army with their Delta Force, and they can go into any area in the world and conduct an action without a declaration of war. This is an empire. This is a Roman Empire. America is a Roman Empire. That's why I call it the Pope's Holy Roman 14th Amendment, Socialist, Communist, Corporate Fascist, American Empire. And so what does this empire do? Well, one of the things it does is it's going to facilitate the establishment of the revival of the Pope's revived Latin kingdom of Jerusalem, which we call Israel. The Jews have a right to their land. It's their land. They have a right to Israel. God calls it Israel in Ezekiel 38:8. But in the eyes of the Pope, it is the revived Latin kingdom of Jerusalem. The Pope considers Jerusalem his own. Two of the most important cities, according to the Jesuits, according to Wiley in his work on History of the Reformation, History of Protestantism, and his sections on the Jesuits in Volume 2, he says the two most important cities are Babylon and Jerusalem. And so, that's why the Jesuits facilitated the establishment of the Nation of Israel in 1948. And they would use 33rd degree Freemason Harry Truman. They would use Brother Freemason Winston Churchill. And a few months later, they would use Brother Freemason Joseph Stalin to acknowledge it. Okay? And they would create Mossad in 1951. And they would use the German BND that were former SS men like Reinhard Gehlen and others. According to Loftus's work, The Secret What is it? Against the Jews. Secret War Against the Jews. John Loftus. So, they built this huge American empire. And then they've contorted the tax system into being a de facto direct tax that's uniform. Everybody thinks it's not avoidable, but it is. It's just an excise tax for exercising a federal privilege to be either an employee or a trader business, quote unquote, as they define it. And so now everybody believes the income tax is unavoidable, and so they tax the people of the empire to death to pay the debt, to pay the interest on the national debt, according to the Grace Commission of 1984-85. W.R. Grace, head of the Knights of Malta in America at the time, co-conspirator in the Kennedy assassination, I would add, so that they can use the American people for commercial purposes and for war. To the end of restoring the temporal power of the Pope of Rome around the world. It's this empire that's built communist Russia. Look at any of the productions of the Birch Society. Look at the writings of Anthony Sutton, Wall Street and the Rise, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Look at Anthony Sutton's work, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. This military government, Washington, has built communism, fascism, and has built communism in China. Edmund Paris said that the State Department put Mao Zedong in power. And in 1949, the one who's overseeing the State Department is Francis Cardinal Spellman, the one who is the head of the Kennedy assassination, as I document in my book, The Vatican Assassins. It's the same Francis Cardinal Spellman that's going to oversee the attack, the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty. Proved it in a previous broadcast. Spellman's running LBJ. LBJ says, I want that GD ship at the bottom of the ocean. I'm not ready to embarrass our allies. While he was busy fornicating with a Jewish Mossad woman. LBJ, Freemason, trained by Jesuits for 1 year at Georgetown, was totally in the hands of the Jesuits in Washington and overseen by Francis Cardinal Spellman during the Kennedy assassination and during the attack on the USS Liberty. Because he wanted to sink the Liberty, blame Egypt, then invade Egypt, while at the same time, Russia, USSR was going to send conventional missiles out of their subs to bomb Dome of the Rock and the Alaska Mosque. And if you don't believe it, get the book, Sacrifice, get the DVD. It's four-volume set, four CDC set. Sacrificing Liberty. Get it. Watch it. So in conclusion, Chris, make up a sequel. The sequel will include the North's collaboration in the assassination of Lincoln. Show that the purpose of the war was to destroy the Protestant Reformation down there and then to centralize power in Washington with the 14th Amendment. Then show that this Yankee Union horde will go out and conduct its War of the Great Plains and kill hundreds of thousands of buffalo with piles of bones 25 feet high for the purpose of starving the Indian nations and consigning them to reservations to make jewelry. Show that part. That was done by the Yankee Union Army, and the first horrible, terrible treaty was the Treaty of Fort Laramie, overseen by Roman Catholic General of the Army, Philip Sheridan, advised by his Roman Catholic Jesuit, Pierre de Schmitt, and you have de Schmitt as one of the individuals on your American Jesuits. And they have a statue of de Schmitt at Gonzaga University. I was just out there a few months ago, and there he is. Evil, wicked man, officer in the Yankee Union Army, chaplain, advisor to Philip Sheridan in the decimation of the Indian nations. And the Indian chiefs called him Black Robe. And there's a book titled Black Robe concerning Pierre de Schmitt. So show that. Show then the robber barons, Chris. Show the robber barons are consolidating all this land, and consolidating all this power. Show that Jesse James was never really killed, and get the work from Ralph Epperson, that five-volume set, that he goes on to be under another name. He goes on to be a senator in North Dakota, and he has all these copper mines, and he builds railroads. He's a high-level 33rd degree Freemason. The Jesuits are going to make their empire a Masonic empire, in both North and South and West, in which then to use this Masonic Empire, controlled by the Pope and his Knights of Columbus and Knights of Malta and these other Roman Catholic secret societies, along with Freemasonry, using this empire to restore the temporal power of the Pope around the world. And that's the end game of all of this. And that's why the solution is for your state, Chris, for your state of Tennessee, to declare its independence from District of Columbia. Every state needs to declare its independence. We've had enough. We don't want to be the Pope's lackeys anymore. We're not going to fight his crusades anymore. We're not going to send our boys off to die for nothing anymore. We're not going to pay the Pope's income tax, privilege tax, war tax anymore. No more. And we're going to have our own nation once again. And I advocate racial separation unto nationhood. That's correct. Don't hate anybody. But we want to preserve our race, language, and culture, the historic white-raced peoples of the Protestant Reformation, the Great Awakenings, so we can preserve our history, our culture, our beautiful culture, the most beautiful culture of all cultures ever. And that the blacks, that they want to have their own nation, there's a lot of black Baptists in this country, they need to have their own state. You can border our state. If anybody invades you, we'll help you fight them off. If anybody invades us, you can help us. But racial separation unto nationhood as we serve the Lord. If we don't do this, Chris, if we don't expose this grand design of the Jesuit order to use this empire in its final crusade in the Mideast and in the Far East, only to then be invaded what I've called for 20 years a Sino-Soviet Muslim invasion, if we don't explode the reality of this, and if we don't show that the end game is to kill every Jew in North America with this new right that's coming to power, with this quasi-fascism that's going to come to power, get the book, The Beast Reawakens by Martin Lee. Get the other book, The Neo-Catholics by Betty Claremont. Shows they want to establish a new right. And all these apostate Protestants and Baptists are going to go right along with it, going to side with Trump, our Savior, whoever they want to call, whoever they want to bring up. But we're going into martial law, a new right, and it's all a result of Proclamation 2040, whereby out of that proclamation, the President, Commander-in-Chief, can declare martial law. If you need any help, I'll be happy to help you, Chris. But you need to put out an addendum to American Jesuits. American Jesuits, too. It's my prayer that you will. So, until then, Brother Eric John Phillips, 24/7 World Radio, on this July the 1st, 2024. Send your gifts to rbpbchurch@comcast.net. Pardon me, rbpbdonate@comcast.net. You can send that PayPal gift there, or you can send it to my Cash App at Eric, E-R-I-C, John, J-O-N, Phyllis, P-H-E-L-P-S. And thank you, Ray, for your donation of just today. Thank you, brother. Or you can send a check to RBT, P.O. Box 306, Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, 17073. Appreciate a check, gift to PayPal, or Cash App. And appreciate your prayers that we can stave off this Jesuit attack and its final attempt at annihilation of what's left of historic white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Western civilization and bringing us into neo-Nazi, neo-fascist martial law. Unless the Lord would send repentance and faith through a great awakening that his preachers need to preach. So until next time we meet, may the Lord bless. And I trust this is a blessing to you, Brother Chris, as this was devoted to you and your great work, American Jesuits, which again I recommend all the listeners get a copy of American Jesuits by Adelim Films, produced by Christian J. Pinto. Until next time we meet, Maranatha, the Lord is coming.